talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Betts.
And today is December 7th. We weren't here last week.
What? What?
I was sick. Now, 3 weeks ago, we showed up with hangovers. Or I had a hangover 3 weeks ago. But I soldiered through. I soldiered through 3 weeks ago. Last week, I just couldn't get out of bed. It was sad. So we got extra stuff to talk about. So let's quit wasting time. Michelle's going to talk about the top 10 at the box office. Michelle, how's that Victor Frankenstein doing?
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow. That was so out of left field.
That's what the audience has said when they encountered it. It's like, what?
Wow, and with a hefty price tag, too. Exactly. It. Here we go. The top 12 domestic weekend box office estimates from our friends over at Rentrack. Number one, still number one, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 from Lionsgate.
That's boring.
That's wonderful.
It took in this weekend $18.6 million. Stateside, its haul now stands at $227.1 million.
Yeah, I wonder if how that's... I remember hearing that they were a little disappointed with its opening weekend, but I don't know if it's holding steady or what.
They're putting on a brave face,
I think people are finding out that the little sister gets killed and they're staying away.
Oh, nice.
They're just tired of all the ripoffs. They've confused it with all the
A movie that should have been one movie instead of this part two and three.
Oh, everyone's doing that
so
stuff.
Old. Universal's Krampus that we've been championing at the website was number two and brought in $16
million. Yeah.
The film stars Adam Scott and Toni Collette. Directed by Michael Dougherty, cult favorite Trick or Treat, projected to pull in $10 million. And ended up making $16 million. So it did really well, and a good word of mouth. Next weekend, it should do pretty well.
Yeah, I did a good trailer.
Yeah, lots of happy folks at Universal about that, I suppose.
Totally enjoyed it, and I did an interview with the score composer, Douglas Pipe, so that's up at the website as well. At number three was Creed from Warner Brothers at $15.5 million. Great word of mouth is helping, so the domestic total now stands at $65.1 million.
Now, its opening weekend, it got trounced by The Good Dinosaur, so they've kind of switched places.
They have, exactly. Yeah. They have, which leads us to number four, The Good Dinosaur from Disney. That came in at $15.5 million drop, but however, it dropped off sharply, 60%.
Oh,
yeah.
Dinosaur movies will do that.
I'm telling you, it's a dark Pixar movie.
Well, it's just not as good as the last Pixar movie we
agreed.
Saw. You know, that's the problem with it, mostly.
The film has brought in $75.9 million so far. At number five is Sam Mendes' Spectre. That brought in $5.4 million. So as of right now, from its opening in November, it's brought in $184.5 million at the box office. Oh. Number six, The Night Before, $4.9 million. Number seven is The Peanuts Movie, $3.5 million. Coming in at number eight is Spotlight, the award season contender film from Open Road. That came in at $2.9 million. Another award season contender, Brooklyn, from Fox Searchlight, came in at $2.4 million. Mm. And number 10 was Secret in Their Eyes, the film that Tom reviewed for us. That came in at $1.9 million. Number 11, still in there, The Martian, Ridley Scott's film, $1.6 million. And at number 12, Jim's favorite, Love the Coopers.
No, I share that favor with Tom. We both love it much.
Hell yeah. No, wait a minute. Where's Victor Frankenstein? I don't see it anywhere on this list.
So in limited release, we'll talk about some of these smaller movies.
Well, if I could hold off a second. Sure. I'm wondering how many theaters Spotlight and Brooklyn were in. They're not in the thousand each, are they?
Let's see.
Something close to it.
They're granting traction Spotlight. It opened 5 weeks ago. That's at $16 million, and Brooklyn is at 11. So they're starting to expand into more and more theaters.
Okay, but they're not anywhere near 2,700 screens or anything like that. It's a smaller rollout or a slower rollout.
A lot of these same and limited releases, the Weinstein Company's Macbeth, they opened in five theaters, but it earned a lackluster 67,000. Per average screen, 13,000. Fox Searchlight's Youth fared slightly better. That took in 80,000 from four theaters. And that's rolling out. So that was like from about 100 theaters. Amazon, their first theatrical release was Spike Lee's She-Ra's.
Well, I understand. Well, I saw the Amazon logo at the start of
How do you pronounce it?
She-Ra's.
She-Ra's.
Okay. Yeah. Jim saw that.
That earned $1.2 million over 305 screens and is being distributed by Roadside Attractions. Audiences in Chicago gave it its biggest boost.
When I heard that the people in office and some of the leaders in Chicago weren't happy about that film.
Right.
They're calling for a boycott.
But everybody's trying to make way for Star Wars coming up, so they're trying to get out there as soon as they can.
And the Chipmunks movie.
Which and I saw the trailer from last week.
Oh, yeah. I saw John Waters at the Sheldon last week, and he is in the Chipmunks movie.
Oh, no
kidding?
He's
in the new one?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He's quite excited about it.
Hilarious.
Well, he should stop doing cameos and direct somewhere. I think that's what you were
saying. Oh, I know. Yes. He was talking. He goes, somebody asked him, "Are you have a new movie in the works?" He hasn't made a movie since A Dirty Shame, and that was 10 or 12 years ago. And that's a dirty shame that he hasn't made a movie. But he goes, "Oh, well, I was in talks to do a sequel to Hairspray, but that's fallen through. But I got a couple more books. So as long as I can tell stories, I'll just continue to write books." And I think we were all thinking, no, we want you to keep making movies. Mr. Waters. Speaking of John Waters, he had his top. Did you see his top 10 of 2015?
No, I haven't seen that. I'd be curious about
his number one was Helmut Berger Actor. Have you heard of this documentary?
No, I have not heard of that.
Oh, well, Helmut Berger was, of course, a star. He was in Visconti's The Damned, and he's still alive. I think he's in his 80s. And
mostly 60s stuff.
He says this documentary is just mind-boggling. He says Helmut Berger is being interviewed by the director of the movie, and he starts masturbating. And the director just starts screaming at him, "What the hell are you doing?" And they left this in the film. John Waters says it's just... he said it's the best movie of 2015. His second favorite movie of 2015 was Cinderella. Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella.
Really?
Okay.
Waters is a very visionary writer and critic and filmmaker.
He has a unique taste. Yeah, he does. Sure, to go from Helma to Cindy.
Yeah, and he also liked Tangerine. That was in his top 10 list, which I really liked too.
Yeah, it's been a lot of...
That's when I skipped at the theater. I thought, I'm not going anywhere near this movie.
Oh, the trailer just looks so obnoxious.
I know. But then I watched the screener that they sent me, and I loved it. That may end up making my top 10 list. Have you watched it yet?
I have watched it, yeah. In the trailer, they showed nothing about the cab driver.
Yeah,
it was a really compelling story.
Right. No doubt. And then you got Clue Gallagher in the backseat of the cab in one
scene. That's why I'm really glad they've sent out DVD screeners, to the awards, for voters, because it is. It's going to make a lot of top 10 lists.
Well, they didn't have any actual screenings in theaters for us, but, they sent me the disc, and I was like, I better take a look at it, because it has, I know it was on the British, was it the BFI list? Was that it? But it was in their top 10. Yeah. Sight and Sound's top 10, I think.
It was in John Waters' top 10, and maybe mine. All right, we got a lot of movies to review. Holy cow, look at all these movies we got to review. Let's start with The Danish Girl.
I want to sketch you. Lily.
We should go out tonight. Give them something different.
Lily.
You're exquisite.
You're different from most girls. I feel I'd need to ask your permission before I kissed you.
The Danish Girl stars Eddie Redmayne and that cute Alicia Vikander as Einar and Gerda Wegener, who were some Dutch artists back in the 1920s. And he was a transvestite, or is it transsexual? I need to use the correct...
I think transsexual would be the proper term.
Well, they had a pretty normal marriage until one day when she asked him to try on some hose because she was painting these ballerinas and she needed a leg model. And I guess he had nice skinny legs. And boy, that got him all excited.
He's like, finally!
Yeah.
But he's a celebrated landscape artist, and she's she's trying to get some traction going as a portrait artist. So she was doing a painting of, I guess, her friend who was a ballerina, who's played by Amber Heard, as I recall, Johnny Depp's better half.
Mm.
So
I thought it was an admirable film, but I didn't love it at all. I thought it worked best when it talked about sort of the medical dilemma that this kid was going through. They sort of branded him mentally ill, and they wanted to give him shock therapy and possibly a lobotomy if he hadn't run out of the hospital at one time. I thought it worked well during those scenes. I thought the personal story sort of lacked energy, and it was sort of humorless, and I sort of admired it while I was watching it, but the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. Eddie Redmayne's is good, and so is Alicia Vikander.
I wanted to know a little bit more about her character. I wanted to know, you're, it's hinted at and kind of shown in a couple of scenes how she's reacting to this change in her husband, but I think that they really could have delved into what she was dealing with. At one point, she starts sort of a tentative romance with one of her husband's childhood buddies, who's played by Matthias Steinhardt, I think is his name.
Yeah, Far From the Madding Crowd.
Who I didn't recognize without his beard first off, and then I realized it was him. And that's not followed through enough, I think, in the film. It's kind of an interesting, you know, weird relationship. He kind of, you know, when he finally does meet up with Redmayne's character again, it's like, yeah, I kind of knew this was happening or something. They hint that they had sort of a romance when they were kids, when they were boys or something like that. It's a gorgeous looking film. It's the sets and all that, and the costumes are just amazing.
It's from director Tom Hooper, who won the Oscar for The King's Speech, and he and Eddie Redmayne had been talking about doing this film all the way back when they did Les Mis.
Well, this is an improvement over Les Mis.
The Danish Girl. It's maybe a little better than Les Mis, but it's not. I don't think it's a great film. Tom Hooper directs it. You know, he's a very stately, highbrow director. Maybe Tobe Hooper should have directed it. It might have been a little more lively.
I love what Tom Hooper does. I loved what he did with John Adams on HBO, the miniseries and Elizabeth the First. But maybe this was just maybe not.
Yeah, Redmayne's making some odd acting choices through a lot of it that's not quite working.
I had heard that they originally wanted to have a woman in this part.
Well,
there's
Nicole Kidman.
They looked at Nicole Kidman was at one time attached to it. It may have been better. There's this, and we talked about this, where he dresses up in drags and he goes to these society parties, and everybody goes, "Oh, you're so beautiful! You're so beautiful!" It looks like Eddie Redmayne in drag. It's like Clark Kent wearing glasses, people won't know he's Superman.
Well, I think, you know, at the first party he goes to, he's walking hand in hand with Alicia Vikander, and all the fellas, their eyes turn around to look at him, and it's like he's right next to Alicia Vikander.
Yeah. So if they would have cast a woman in the role, they could have gotten around some of those problems. But it's a fine film. I'm sure Mr. Redmayne will be nominated for an Oscar. I don't see him winning. He just won last year.
He may not even be nominated. It's not getting a lot of traction.
He's not picked up any love from the critics groups and their awards so far. And I don't know. It seems like, you know, he was like the easy choice for a while. He played, you know, Stephen Hawking. Yeah. And it was kind of a physical type role. This is kind of a physical type role also, and kind of a showy acting role.
And if you notice, when Focus Features released the first still of him, was right after he had won the Oscar. It was in the weeks, like, right after. And, I mean, it looked promising at the time.
Yeah. Last week at Schlafly Bottleworks, we screened a print of Myra Breckinridge.
You realize once we cut it off, it won't grow back.
You have all the kinky angles that are in right now. I mean, have you any that I don't know about?
Oh, Letitia.
What about studs?
They don't call you the queen of the casting couch for nothing.
This is the granddaddy of all sex change operations. So, have you ever seen that one, Jim?
It's been a while since I've seen it. Yeah,
that movie is way ahead of its time. I would rather sit through that movie five more times than sit through The Danish Girl again. That's where Rex Reed gets a sex change operation from John Carradine and turns into Raquel Welch. I think it's actually a great movie, and it's really funny. And Raquel Welch has never been sexier. Even in 1 Million Years BC, I don't think she's as sexy as she is in Myra Breckinridge. And she has such a way with comedy in that film. And Mae West shows up.
And she's is she coming on to Tom Selleck?
She has all these sexual double entendres with Tom Selleck, and he's like, "How tall are you?" And Tom Selleck goes, "I'm 6'7". Who goes, "Well, forget about the 6 foot. I want to see the 7 inches or something like that." I think it has kind of a bad reputation. I think it's way, way, decades ahead of its time. There was a movie called Sextet that she starred in a few years later that's really, really awful. I think people tend to lump those two films together. But I do recommend seeking out Myra Breckinridge instead of The Danish.
Well, if you can find a theater that's playing Myra Breckinridge.
All right. Jim, you have seen Chirac.
Well, what else do they love?
Repeat after me.
I will deny all rights of access or entrance.
I will deny all rights of access or entrance.
Mr. Strider had them all take a solemn oath.
Lock it up! Lock it up!
Stop the murder madness, or there would be no more Pope.
The situation's out of control because I'm in front of an empty stripper pole.
That's right. You get snubbed.
Which is Spike Lee's newest. Tell us about Chi-Raq, please.
Well, Chi-Raq, it's a modern retelling of Lysistrata, the old Greek play about the women that are tired of the men, the Spartans and the Trojans fighting, so they decide to withhold sex from the men until they stop fighting.
Oh, yeah.
And Spike
No peace.
Well, yeah, that's the chant that they have in this new version of it, this modern update of
they didn't say that in the 16th century text?
I don't think so. No. But yeah, it's directed by Spike Lee, and he's set it to modern times in Chicago, where they're having quite a problem with deaths, the gang violence on the South Side. And the film starts out on a black screen with all these statistics about, you know, like how many, you know, people have been killed there. More Americans have been killed and were killed in Chicago than they were, you know, in a year in Iraq or in Afghanistan. Therefore, the term Chi-Raq. The film itself focuses on a character named Lysistrata, who is played by, I've just blanked on her name, but just the actress who plays Dawn on Mad Men, if you recall her. And I believe she had the lead in, I think it's Tamarin Doers, I believe is her name.
It was White People.
Yeah, Dear White People.
Dear White People.
She was in last year. And she is actually the girlfriend of a rapper that calls himself Chi-Raq, played by Nick Cannon. When they get shot at, his gang, I believe he's with the Spartans, has to retaliate against the Trojans, who are led by Cyclops, who was played by Wesley Snipes. And
should have had James Marsden.
That's right. And they try to do a retaliation and end up shooting this little girl, who is the 9-year-old daughter of Jennifer Hudson. So we've got that subplot going and her dealings with the church, and the whole film is sort of told in rhyme. It's sort of wrapped, including the narration, or I guess you would call it the narrator.
Well, how come your review at We Are Movie Geeks was not in rhyme?
I'm just not creative enough. Actually, yeah. I didn't review it. I think Kate reviewed
it. Okay, you said it was kind of a mixed bag. What's good about it and what's bad about it?
Well, what's good about it is Samuel L. Jackson as the narrator. Well,
Samuel L. Jackson's sort of always good.
Oh, yeah, he's wearing like these outrageous outfits. I think he's in a complete yellow outfit. His raps and rhymes are very entertaining. Actually, an acquaintance of yours, Daniel Patrick Kelly. He has a short cameo in it. He's good in what's kind of a silly segment of the film.
Yeah, I hear John Cusack steals the movie.
Oh, I don't know what he was doing in it. He delivers this fiery. Well, I wonder if you ever said he's literally preaching to the choir about how stopping violence in Chicago. And of course, nobody in his congregation is acting out and shooting people. That is at the funeral of Jennifer Hudson's daughter. There are interpretive dancers dancing around the child's coffin. It's very odd. A lot of the film is a little outrageous. I mean, I realize he's trying to hammer in his message about stopping the violence down there, but some of the comedy is so clumsy and awkward. D.B. Sweeney plays the mayor of Chicago in it, and he's just a buffoon. Some of the comedy doesn't quite work. Some of the dramatic stuff is just hammered in too much. I will say that that Nick Cannon and I think her name is Tamron, like I say, I think that they do a nice job. Wesley Snipes is playing a goofball character. They've given him almost like a Peter Lorre laugh, which is very odd. So, you know, least, you know, Spike is passionate. You can kind of feel his passion coming through the film, but some of it is just so clunky and awkward.
So mixed review.
Mixed review.
Well, it's good to see Spike Lee's getting a movie released in theaters. His last film went straight to DVD. That was called The Sweet Blood of Jesus, which is a remake of Ganja and Hess. And the film before that was called Red Hook Summer, which played at one theater way the heck up in North County. So Jim thinks Chi-Raq is a mixed bag. I saw The Heist.
The way it appears to me is they're taking a buttload of money every Thursday night. Someone were to rob them of that money. Stealing from the Pope? Suicide. Let's do it.
That's only playing in one theater in St. Louis. That stars Robert De Niro and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Is that his name?
Yes. From wrestling? Yes.
Yeah, okay. And Dave Bautista. It's a caper film about Robert De Niro plays a guy who owns a casino, and two of his employees are Dave Bautista and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Jeffrey Dean Morgan's daughter is in the hospital with cancer, and he's run out of money, and they're going to... This doesn't make any sense, but the hospitals are going to kick her out of the cancer ward because he can't pay his bills, which I don't think hospitals do. So he asks Robert De Niro to lend him the money. Robert De Niro refuses, so he teams up with David Bautista, and they rob the casino. And as they're making their getaway, their getaway driver panics and drives off. So they're running down the street with this satchel full of money, and they commandeer a bus. And
city bus?
Yeah, yeah, a city bus is going down the street. So over the last half of the movie, the last two-thirds of the movie takes place on this bus. So it's this sort of hostage drama, caper film, all rolled into one. It's really quite awful. Mm-hmm. De Niro, he's kind of turning into a Nicolas Cage. He does make some great movies.
Thank you, he is.
Like, yeah. Oh, Joy, which was really good. We'll review that next week. And, you know, Silver Linings Playbook. The Intern's a very good movie, but he also doesn't seem to turn down too many movies.
He's been doing a lot of these direct-to-video.
Yeah, look at IMDb and look at his last dozen movies. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And go to Redbox, and there they are.
Yeah. So this is set in modern times?
Yeah. And it's only playing at the Keller, which I like the Keller, but it has the worst projection system. You go there, especially there's two big screens, and they're just really dark. I don't know if they use substandard bulbs or they're just not turning them up all the way. But there were some nighttime scenes where I just could not tell what the heck is going on. I don't like seeing movies there.
Well, that's a shame.
It's a bargain theater, so you get what you pay for, I guess. It's still showing over at the Keller.
How about if you get it at Redbox or Video On?
Yeah, I think if you get it on Netflix or Redbox, and it's a decent, serviceable little caper film, but I certainly wouldn't go out of my way.
So
no
actresses in it, no?
Kate Bosworth is in it, and she has one scene. She plays Robert De Niro's daughter, and she has one scene where they meet at this diner and they talk, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the movie. I don't recommend The Heist. All three of us saw Krampus. I don't know why they didn't show us Krampus in advance. I mean, they showed us The Gallows. I mean, they showed us some bad horror films.
We get some of the crappiest things, and then here comes this gem, Krampus.
I know, and we actually had to open our wallets and buy tickets. It was painful.
But we did. Oh, no, we did it gladly.
Well, not glad.
I don't know.
Especially for Krampus.
Speak for yourself.
It was good. Exactly.
Krampus is a...
He and his helpers did not come to give, but to take. He is the shadow of St. Nicholas.
It was more of a comedy than a horror film. It's not very scary at all, but
it's
a good.
Christmas movie. It's a horror movie. It's a comedy. I mean, and it's
It definitely has a Gremlins feel to
it.
Yeah,
definitely Joe Dante or even sort of a Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, it's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I will commend it for trying to do more physical effects, trying to not rely too much on the CGI as much as a lot of horror films do these days.
And had said Michael Dougherty had done Trick or Treat before, and it was shot over in New Zealand.
Yeah, I saw that at the end credits.
And Adam Scott. It's got a great cast. Adam Scott and David Koechner.
This is one of the earliest the big screen appearances of Alison Tolman, who was so good in Fargo on the TV series based on the classic Coen Brothers film. She was I think, picked up a couple of awards for that. She's very good in this, along with David Koechner I'm trying to recall some of the other folks.
Conchita Farrell plays the drunk aunt.
But Toni Collette, when they signed her onto that, you know, that's when everybody else kind of got on board. The best part, the part that, and maybe you guys will agree, one of the standout parts of the film was the stop motion animation.
Sure.
To convey the whole, you know, when the grandmother with the German grandmother
that was
she had been introduced to Krampus and how she had met the character and the elves and the little
it was like a
minions.
Storybook come to life.
Yeah, I just
well done.
It was really
ambitious. The whole film was very ambitious. And I liked the creature design of the Krampus himself. They kind of kept that secret
in the promotions. Jack in the Box character is the stuff of nightmares with his. sort of like an Anaconda Jack in the Box.
Yeah, and I spoke with the score's composer because he and Mike Dougherty had worked together. Douglas Pipe had worked together on Trick or Treat. So he kind of gave it this distorted. He used, you know, if you watch the end credits, they used all the traditional, you know, Christmas music. But he takes those.
He twists them around.
And he totally does. So, yeah, what a fun movie.
Yeah, so we recommend Krampus, doggone it.
Sure.
And it's doing well, so, and I think it'll continue to do well. It'll be a Christmas classic.
Imagine what happened if you had showed it to us at a screening, for goodness sakes.
And the reviews that are out, the reviews are great.
It's getting great reviews.
Yeah, for
it deserves them. A movie that doesn't deserve great reviews, according to Jim, is Don Verdeen, from the director of Napoleon Dynamite. You saw Don Verdeen. I think it may open this Friday. We're not even sure.
I streamed it last
Tell us about
week.
Don Verdeen, Jim.
Well, Don Verdeen is from the minds behind Napoleon Dynamite, the Hess brothers. I believe Jared Hess is the director of the two, and he and his brother both worked on the script. And it's sort of about a low-rent Indiana Jones. Sam Rockwell plays this fellow that's set in modern times, but it starts about 10 or 15 years before he's sort of a celebrated archaeologist who finds these amazing artifacts from the Old Testament. Some of the things you're like, well, I don't know if that's really. He claims to have found the shears that cut Samson's hair, you know, things like that. That's kind of an amusing idea. This guy is sort of a huckster, and he's when the film opens up after this home video thing, that prologue, he's speaking before a church group, and there are only about seven or eight people in the crowd there, and he's got a little assistant, Carol, played by Amy Ryan, who we saw in
Sam Rockwell is
Don Verdeen, the title character,
and that's a terrible title.
Yeah, you know, what that's about.
Why didn't it come up something a little more clever besides the main character's name?
And he's contacted by this outrageous guy behind a church named Tony Lazarus, and he calls himself that because he suffered a fatal heart attack when he was with a hooker and somehow was able to be brought back to life. So then he's adapted the name Lazarus, and he's married the hooker there, and they've started their own church. And he's concerned about the church down the street from him, which is one of these sort of New Agey type things there, where the pastor, you know, wears a turtleneck and plays the guitar. He's played by Will Forte.
It's
got a good cast.
And Danny McBride is Tony Lazarus, and he contacts Don Verdeen because he believes that if Don can find some actual biblical artifacts and show them at his church, that'll give him an edge on Will Forte's church. Mm-hmm. And he's got a connection with a couple of shady diggers in Israel, one of which is played by Germaine Clement, who we really loved in What We Do in Shadows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he's half of Flight of the Conchords, I believe.
Yep.
Yes.
And they provide a couple of artifacts. They're a little dubious, but you know, the people are believing it. And then he goes after a big one, which I don't want to give away. It's another Old Testament artifact, which is a complete fraud, but it attracts the attention of this billionaire in Japan that wants Don to go after the ultimate New Testament artifact, which another archaeologist went after in one of his films. And it's all about them bumbling along and trying to con this guy. And the Germaine Clement character travels to the U.S. from Israel and is sort of blackmailing Don Verdeen in order to romance the Amy Ryan character.
Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with this film?
It just is not very funny. Germaine Clement is doing, I guess, an Israeli accent, but it feels kind of like Bargain Basement Brat. You know, it's the funny accent can only go so far. Generally, Sam Rockwell is a very energetic actor, and he's like, you know, muffled in this. It's kind of got a shambling, pacing problems, I guess.
Okay.
I would be the best thing to say about it. And like I say, it does have a good cast, but they're given so little to do. It's a very clever idea with these bogus biblical artifacts, but they're hitting easy targets with the satire, and it just kind of just stumbles along. Yeah.
This is from Lionsgate Premiere, which is an offshoot from Lionsgate.
Yeah.
It's kind of like their indie studio. They put out in August She's Funny That Way, Dragon Blade with Jackie Chan.
Okay.
They also put out Cooties, Knock Knock. That was Eli Roth's Keanu Reeves movie, Heist, which you just saw.
Oh, that was it. Okay.
Yeah, and Dom Verdeen. And they still have two more movies coming out, Extraction and Exposed. And Exposed is the Keanu Reeves movie that we just ran the trailer for. So they're trying to make a little, well, they're trying, they're like diverse movies.
I don't think they're going to bust through with this one, I'm afraid.
Sounds pretty bad. So Jim does not recommend Dom Verdeen. Jim and Michelle have both seen Macbeth.
All hail Macbeth that shall be king hereafter.
Starring Michael Fassbender. And who else is in there?
Oh, Marion Cotillard. Oh, yeah, Marion Cotillard. And Patty Considine.
Is it as good as Polanski's Macbeth?
Justin Kurzel.
I heard that had a reputation of being very bloody, and this one is pretty bloody.
It's a bloody story. I've heard that they really play up the action in this movie.
They do. It's a very visual. It's a beautiful film.
There's a big Braveheart battle at the start of it. And it's one of these deals where they're doing a lot of slow motion, and then we'll suddenly speed it up and then go to slow motion. A lot of really super slow-mo, tied up close-ups of people.
Well, that happened on the stage a lot in the 18th century.
Well, right. And it's the movie is an adaptation of the Scottish play.
Right, right. Okay. Of Big Bill Shakespeare's play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's a prolific guy, that Shakespeare. But
I could almost see Fassbender getting the nomination for this over Steve Jobs.
Well, I certainly enjoyed it more than Steve Jobs. Yes, that's for certain.
Same. And it plays, I did not see it on the big screen, but at home it plays really well, especially for voters and for critics groups, giving top 10 list.
Is it long?
It doesn't feel too long.
It doesn't. The pacing of it's great. Mm-hmm. And Marion Cotillard, just once again, another stellar performance.
I wanted more with her. Yeah. Yeah. That more of the relationship between the two of them. You know, all of a sudden, I'm wanting to give away spoilers from a play that's several hundred years old. But when she exits the film, you're like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, you want to see it a bit more. I was impressed. I believe the actor's name is Sean Harris that played Macduff.
Yes.
Who is sort of. The nemesis of Macbeth, and he's very good. There's a sequence with Elizabeth Debicki as his wife, as she is hunted down by Macbeth's people, and it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely one of the better Shakespeare adaptations. It's very very interesting.
Of note, the director and Michael Fassbender are working on Assassin's Creed together coming up.
Jonathan something is the
Justin
guy? Justin,
yeah. Justin Kurzel.
All right.
Justin Kurzel. Okay.
And cool. It was a standout at Cannes earlier this year.
Yeah.
The director's name is Justin Kurzel. He's out of Australia. He did the Snowtown Murders.
I saw that.
2011. And
that was a creepy serial killer film.
Exactly. Oh, okay. And a movie called The Turning back in 2013.
Huh. Hmm. All right. So Jim and Michelle think Macbeth is a darn good Shakespeare film. And,
yes.
It opens Friday. So check that one out. Okay, we're done with reviews. This week, we're seeing a bunch of new movies that open, Christmas time and this weekend. We've already seen The Revenant. I guess we'll review that next week. Jim has seen Hateful Eight. I missed the screening because that was the night
and let me tell you all about it.
That was the night of the John Waters thing that I went to. Tonight, we're seeing In the Heart of the Sea. That is Ron Howard's film about whaling vessels and whales knocking people out of their ships and
supposedly
them
the inspiration for Moby Dick.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it looks really cool. I think the trailer looks like an old-fashioned movie epic. It's in 3D. I'm really, really looking forward to this film. And I will be reviewing that. You can look for my review Thursday night.
And Warner Brothers, I mean, they have enough faith in it. They took it out of the summer and they put it into the award season, territory.
Hmm.
So we'll see how that fares.
Yeah. And then what else are we seeing this week? Oh, Concussion. I've actually watched Concussion on the screener, but you guys are going to see it, I think, Wednesday morning. That stars Will Smith.
Yeah.
They found a disease that no one has ever seen. Repetitive head trauma chokes the brain.
The NFL does not want to talk to you.
You turned on the lights and gave their biggest boogeyman a name.
You're going to war with a corporation that owns a day of the week.
No proof was presented today because there simply isn't any.
Coroner from Nigeria who's sort of, I'm not going to review it. We can review it when we've all seen it. But he discovers that these football players have had decades and decades of head injuries and that are causing mental illness. And
yeah, it's going to be an uncomfortable theater. That's what I'm going to see. Yeah. There is a screening tomorrow night at Macbeth, but I'm not a fan of that theater, so that's why I like Michelle, I watched the screener DVD of it.
You mean the Plaza Frontenac?
Oh, well, I didn't want to say.
I know what you mean. And people talk at the Plaza Frontenac.
Oh, yeah.
Not the screenings, but just if you go to, matinees there because it's close to my house, and I think a lot of old women shopping just kind of wander into the Frontenac to get off their feet for a couple hours, and they'll just
the seats are so cramped, the sound is so low, and when we saw Legend there, people were coming in 20 minutes into the movie, for goodness sakes.
What else have we seen? I'm seeing Chipmunks Saturday. There's a new Chipmunks movie. And John Waters, who this is the third time I've mentioned him, is in the Chipmunks movie, which makes me want to see it. I haven't liked the first three Chipmunks movies.
I only saw one of them.
So maybe this fourth one is the charm. I'll let you know next week.
They got it right, finally.
Yeah. Also, we saw Joy last week. That's David Russell's new film.
I have real ambitions and real ideas.
We're making an invention, and it's very serious.
Joy's never run a business in her entire life.
It's my fault. I gave her the confidence to think she was more than just an unemployed housewife.
I don't want to end up like my family.
I have to do things myself once and for all.
Okay, Godspeed. Good luck. Here we go.
Go to see Youth on Thursday.
Oh, okay. Youth.
The Michael Caine film.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. That's from an Italian director, I believe, the fellow that directed The Great Beauty.
And Harvey Keitel.
Jane Fonda, Paul Dano, Rachel Weisz. Yes. So,
there we go.
Good cast.
So there's all kinds of stuff coming up, and we'll be reviewing Sisters also. We didn't mention that. Is there a screening of Sisters coming up?
I think maybe next Monday or Tuesday.
Yes, we have the contest up for that as well.
I believe next Monday maybe is Point Break and Tuesday is Sisters.
Yeah,
and
anybody locally listening wants to go to a screening, please, enter our contest because we have a lot of screening contests coming up.
Supposedly there's going to be a screening Sunday of Daddy Comes Home.
Daddy's Home. It's a Sunday screening at 3 o'clock.
Supposedly.
That's right in the middle of our St. Louis Film Critics Association meeting.
Yeah, but hopefully they're going to change it.
Yeah, they're gonna have to.
Hopefully Michael can go.
Okay, somebody else can go for our site. Lots going on in terms of retro cinema locally here in St. Louis. Late Night Grindhouse next weekend, which will be the 11th and 12th, is showing John Carpenter's They Live.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Starring Roddy Piper. When was that made? Around 88, maybe?
Something like that, yeah. Keith David, Meg Foster, I believe is her name, right?
That's right. She's in it. That's a fun movie. I think this is the first John Carpenter movie that they've shown at Late Night Grindhouse.
Yeah.
And Roddy died a couple months ago, so hopefully there'll be a big crowd. So that's Midnight's Friday and Saturday at High Point.
Yeah, it's kind of become a cult film.
It sure has.
A friend of mine has designed a T-shirt that refers to the current political landscape, utilizing images from They Live. So
yeah,
it's become
a meme with the little robot face guys. And then the Mildred Kemper Museum is sponsoring a war on film. They're showing three classic war movies. That's this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 8th, 9th, and 10th. The first one they're showing two World War I anti-war films, and then they're showing this bizarre World War II propaganda film that Jim and I saw a couple of years ago. Yeah. The first one is tomorrow night, All Quiet on the Western Front. That's a classic. It won Best... I think it was the first talkie to win Best Picture in 1930.
Yeah, first full talkie, yeah.
Yeah, Lou Ayres and Louis Milestone, I think, directed
it. Yeah, Louis Milestone. It's a great film.
They just showed it at Webster U. I just saw it there about 6 months ago.
For a film from 1929, it's tough.
It is, and it's very bleak and violent, and it's just a great, great World War I movie. Then Wednesday night, they're showing Paths of Glory, which is Stanley Kubrick's very best film. That stars Kirk Douglas and George MacReady, which I think is possibly the greatest villain in cinema. I'm not joking.
And Adolf Manju.
Yes. And Tim Carey is in there. Ralph Meeker. Yeah.
But it is a great film.
It is amazing.
Yeah, I was trying to recall if the Kirk Douglas character in Trumbo mentions or sort of references Kubrick. I think he just says, this director on Spartacus, this Kubrick guy, is driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Great film. I just recall that shot of Kirk emerging from out of the foxhole, walking down, these endless rows of guys in the foxhole. It's really, really great tracking scene.
Trench warfare. It's kind of the first half is kind of a war film, and the second half is a trial. And it's only 88 minutes long. It's just an amazing movie. I'm not going to miss that one. I'll go to that. And then Thursday night is this thing that we saw at SLIFF three or four years ago, which I had never heard of before then. It was called Went to the Day Well? And it's this really bizarre movie about these Nazis who parachute into this little British village. And there's all these old ladies that go after the Nazis with hatchets. And
yeah, it is brutal, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah, well, they're masquerading as British soldiers.
Yeah,
and it turns out that there are already some Nazi agents planted in this British village.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, is it rough, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
At one point... This matronly woman who's been kind of like the stuffy Margaret Dumont type of society woman through most of it. This grenade gets flung into this room with her and a bunch of kids, and she yells at the kids going into the room, and she smothers their grenade. And it's like, my gosh. And you see the blast and all that, and it's just for a film from the 40s. It's just really brutal.
Yeah, it was sort of obscure. I wonder if it's sort of developing something of a cult rep. I think Leslie Banks from Those Dangerous Game is in it.
Yeah,
he's the only actor in it whose name I recognize.
But man, it is that I know the scene you're talking about with the hatchet. That's just, I think when they showed it at SLIFF, the audience was just in amazement at it. Just their mouths were open at that sequence. It's like this is a movie from 70 years ago.
Yeah. So that's three war films Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night of this week at the Tivoli. They all start at 7 o'clock, and they're all free. What the heck? How could you pass on that?
I like that price.
Yeah. This Saturday morning over at the High Point, Michelle's very favorite movie of all time, It's a Wonderful Life.
Centuries before, sailors feared sailing off the edge of the earth.
All hands on deck!
But we were headed for the edge of sanity.
Is that right?
Mm.
No.
No.
You're like my wife. My wife doesn't like A Christmas Story.
If I never see It's a Wonderful Life ever again, it won't be too soon.
Well,
I'll
tell you what. It's 10:30 a.m. It's $5.
Oh, it'll be packed.
It will be sold out. You won't be able to find a place to park. Harry Hamm, who does a great job of introducing the classic film series over at the High Point, will talk about the film before it starts. So,
why can't they show the Albert Finney Scrooge? I'd be good for that.
Well, I don't think that's not the one that most people. Yeah, well, it's like in Krampus, what Scrooge do they show in it? They show Alistair Sim. So.
Exactly. I love that Albert Finney one. That's a musical, and it's got some great songs.
Oh, I just absolutely adore that.
Is that Anthony Newley's songs in it?
Leslie Bergeson and Anthony Newley. Yeah, it was from 1970.
I Thank You Very Much, which was nominated for an Oscar.
It was. Yeah. It was.
In fact, I remember Burt Lancaster sang it on the Oscar, ceremony with Liza Minnelli.
Yeah. And well,
Alec
Guinness plays Jacob Marley in it, doesn't he?
Yeah. Okay. It's got it,
So we recommend the 1970 musical version of
A Christmas Carol,
but it was called Scrooge. We also recommend Bill Murray and Scrooged.
Yeah.
Sure.
And we recommend, of course, It's a Wonderful Life. And, of course, track down the Marlo Thomas remake. What was that called?
It Happened One Christmas.
They should put that out. I think I saw that before I ever saw It's a Wonderful Life.
No, I've seen one.
That was my introduction to the story, was that goofy Marlo Thomas movie with, wasn't Orson Welles, Mr. Potter in that?
Well, I had the perfect introduction to It's a Wonderful Life because I saw it at the University of Chicago, and afterwards they opened up the curtain and Frank Capra came out and talked about it. So that's the best way to see it.
No doubt.
Are they also going to show White Christmas?
I saw White Christmas on Saturday. Tenacious Eats Movies for Foodies just two nights ago, and I took my kids. I had never seen White Christmas before.
Yeah. And speaking of Christmas movies, I guess pretty soon over at Shafley you're going to be hosting
Christmas Story. Yeah, that's on the 18th. I can talk more about that next week. But you're right. Yeah, White Christmas will show on the 19th over at the High Point. That's a fun movie.
Yeah,
Rosemary Clooney and Vera Ellen and
Danny
Kaye, of course, and Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
I had never seen it before. I enjoyed it. And it was great to watch it and eat a gourmet meal, which we do. They're doing Chef in January and the Grand Budapest Hotel in February. So go to tenaciouseats.com. It's selling out quickly. Those things always sell out. One other movie here in town I want to mention. I always like to say there's nothing better than watching a great silent movie with live music. And you'll have your opportunity this Sunday night at 7:30 at Webster University's Moore Auditorium. It is Douglas Fairbanks in the 1920 film Mark of Zorro. Have you ever seen that one, Jim?
Oh, you betcha.
Oh,
I saw
that's
it.
That's a great.
I think I saw it with Stan Cannon when he played with it at the Fox on the big Wolitzer organ there. Well,
that's
there.
Pretty neat. I used to get it on 8mm film from the Kirkwood Library, and I would watch it over and over. That will be a 35mm print on loan from the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, oh yeah. And then they have this grand piano on stage at Webster U, and a fellow from New York named Ben Modell, who's considered to be one of the great silent film accompanists, will be in town. And he writes his own scores for these silent films, so he mm-hmm. will be playing the piano while Mark of Zorro plays. I hope that a lot of people show up for this. I hope they get a good crowd because, you know, you're crazy to miss this.
Especially more and more, they're commissioning composers to write scores to these silent movies. So more and more you're seeing that over the last decade or so.
Oh, yeah. It's just great. Fantastic.
Which is a great treat, a great addition.
Yeah. So that's Sunday night at 7:30 at Webster U's Moore Auditorium, and it's $6, which is a bargain, and it's even less if you're a senior or a student. I will be participating in an event this Thursday at the Missouri History Museum, which is in Forest Park here in St. Louis. It's an event hosted by my friend Johnny Rabbit. It is called On With the Show, and myself and three or four or five other local movie people will be talking about show business history in St. Louis. I will be speaking on the subject of movie stars from St. Louis, but I'm not going to talk about the movie stars that you can go down and see their star on the St. Louis Walk of Fame. I will be talking about some more lesser-known movie stars from St. Louis, which I think will be interesting, or I'll try to make it interesting. Harry Hamm will be talking about, I think, movie theaters, old movie theaters here in St. Louis. We got somebody from the Muni who will be talking about all the stars that came in and performed at the Muni over the years. A couple other people. So that is 10:30 a.m. this Thursday at the Missouri History Museum called On With the Show, and it is a free event. All right, what else can we talk about? How about all these awards that are starting to roll in? The National Board of Review, the New York Critics, L.A. Critics, Boston Critics. This is that time of year. Michelle, you want to talk about that?
Well, last week, while we were gone, the Independent Spirit Award nominations were handed out, and that award show is always the night before the Oscars. It's kind of like the runner-up.
Yeah, kind of the casual Oscars.
If you win the Independent Spirit Award, chances are you're not going to, you know.
But are they all independent films?
That's a fine line these days between what is really true indie, you know, in the dirt and opposed to a studio backing it type. I mean, The Wrestler, you know, that year that Mickey Rourke, he won the Independent Spirit, and then sure enough, Sean Penn wins the Oscar. So, but both of those films that they were nominated for an Independent Spirit Award were backed by studios.
Well, sure. So, yeah, the studios have an independent label now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. That was announced. We have coming up this week actually being announced on December 9th. This Wednesday morning is the Screen Actor Guild Award nominations, so we'll find out which actors are being nominated and acknowledged by their peers. And then December 10th, the day after, are the Golden Globe nominations. So that's coming up. But then, as you said, Tom, we had the Boston Film Critics announced they gave the Best Picture to Spotlight, with the runner-up being Mad Max.
Who did this, L.A.?
This was
Boston.
This was the Boston.
Yeah, Boston's got to give it to Spotlight.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, exactly. and then last week, also while we were gone, the New York Film Critics Circle, they went with Carol for Best Picture and over.
Yeah, Carol won quite a few of those awards, I think.
Yeah, they went with Carol. Yesterday, the Los Angeles Film Critics Award, they went with Spotlight as well.
But they gave George Miller director for Mad Max, which makes sense.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's as of right now, the Chris Tapley over at Variety, who's one of these award season pundit, he said right now, and, you know, agree, disagree, but that right now that he picked out three different performances in three different films that he thought, you know, are going to kind of be all the way, go all the way until Oscar time. Mm-hmm. So Best Picture, Mad Max Fury Road, Carol, Spotlight.
So those three. I think those three. Yeah, I'd add Brooklyn to that. I think that'll carry on into the Oscars,
What about Love the Coopers?
Now, that's another Those are the Razzies you're thinking of.
Sorry,
he has Best Director as Ridley Scott, Todd Haynes for Carol, and George Miller for Mad Max.
That's a good group.
Best Actor, Matt Damon for The Martian.
Yeah. Nice.
I think he's got the inside track.
Michael Keaton for Spotlight.
Which is odd because I think it's a supporting performance.
Yeah. Nobody in that movie dominated.
And Michael Fassbender. Time.
For Steve Jobs or Macbeth?
It's hard to
Steve Macbeth.
That's right.
Best Actress, Brie Larson for Room. Charlotte rambling for 45 years, which has my vote right there.
Do you have a screener there?
Yes, I have one.
I'll bring it to tonight.
And there's an online. There's an online link too. So
well,
they're
we'd
really.
Rather watch the
I know exactly.
Yet, yes, I want to stream
I'm not
it.
Not watching on my computer. Yes.
And how do we pronounce her name from Brooklyn?
Saoirse Ronan.
Best supporting actor he has is Sylvester Stallone. Yay!
Oh, yes.
For Creed. Yay!
Yay!
Mark Rylance.
Yay too.
Yeah.
For Bridge of Spies and Michael Shannon.
Oh, for 99.
He won the LA Award.
Exactly.
For 99 Homes.
He did. Best supporting actress Jennifer Jason Leigh
for Hateful Eight. Yeah. I'd put her up for Anomalisa too. She's great in it.
Yeah,
too.
Kristen Stewart.
For Clouds of Sils Maria.
Yeah. And okay. Alicia Vikander.
For Ex Machina.
No, for Ex Machina. She won the LA for Ex Machina.
She did.
For supporting for that.
Yeah,
huh?
Supporting, yeah. She's terrific. You know, that's a tricky role to play, like a humanoid automaton. You know, I think Jeff Bridges was nominated like 30 years ago for Starman for playing sort of a similar character. And mm-hmm. I think ScarJo should have been nominated last year for playing that type of character in Under the Skin. I'm glad that she's getting recognized for that tricky type of role.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they're thinking screenplay, The Martian, Hateful Eight, Carol, Spotlight. Mm-hmm. And as you said, National Border Review, they also came out with their top 10. They had The Revenant, Spotlight, Brooklyn, Black Mass, which...
Surprising.
What do you think about the acting categories? I'm thinking we're going to
see.
Black
Mass getting any
nominations. I don't think Black Mass is going to get any love. No.
Not even in acting.
No. I remember EW had Johnny Depp high up on their best actor, but I think that's not going to happen.
Not so much him, but Joel Edgerton.
Yeah.
Supporting is just too. You know, even though Edgerton's a lead in it, best actress and best supporting actor are the toughest categories this year. I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're tough. I think Cate Blanchett would almost be a shoo-in if she just hadn't won 2 years ago.
For Carol.
For Carol. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Will it go to Rooney Mara like it did at Cannes?
And I wouldn't count out Jennifer Lawrence for Joy. I think we haven't reviewed that yet, but I think that's a movie that audiences are going to love, especially women audiences.
And also what's really interesting, not one instance of all of this National Border Review and the New York Film Critics and the LA Film Critics, not in one instance was there an overlap in a single category.
Hmm.
So there was not a consensus of, so it's, as of right now, it's anyone's game. It really is.
It's not all J.K. Simmons and Cate Blanchett.
Exactly.
Like
where
this year.
You know, it's not all.
So in other words, don't count out Love the Coopers.
But yeah, I don't know if you saw it. CBS Sunday Morning did a great profile of Brie Larson yesterday, and I think she's definitely going to be in the five for Best Actress. She's one to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, and really the awards to watch for are the St. Louis Film Critics.
Well, of
awards.
Course. Yeah, yes. We're going to
they're the biggies.
Yeah, of course. Well, this Sunday we're going to be sort of wheedling, coming down to our final five. So we're going to be one of the last ones to actually, to give the final ones.
We should move ours up so we're like the first. Why don't we do that? That's
well, it's because St. Louis is usually the last to get the screenings and a lot of that
true.
Stuff. You
that's
know?
True. All right, we're going to have to wrap this up. Although I do want to acknowledge a couple of people who died. Robert Loggia. I think he's going to be best remembered as Frank in Scarface, even though he had a long
but
career.
But he was nominated for Jagged Edge.
That's right. Jagged
and
Edge.
For and for me, TV guy, he's always T-H-E Cat.
That's right, which was based on To Catch a Thief.
Yeah,
I remember that show.
Cool
show. That was a merchandise show. Also, I want to recognize Gabriel Frazetti, who played Choo Choo Man in my favorite movie of all time, Once Upon a Time in the West. I have to confess, I didn't realize he was still alive. I think he was 92.
Oh,
a great Italian actor. He died. And Holly Woodlawn died, who was we were just talking about transvestites and transsexuals. I think my first exposure to a transvestite actor was when I was 15. I went to the Tivoli to see Andy Warhol's Dracula, and it was a double feature with Andy Warhol's Trash, which is the most amazing film with Joe D'Alessandro just hanging out in this apartment with Holly Woodlawn shooting up heroin for real. It's an amazing movie. Holly Woodlawn was kind of a groundbreaking transvestite performer who worked with Andy Warhol and was in that documentary, The Coquettes, that was so good a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So RIP to all of those people and RIP to this show because we're going to have to end it now. Next week we'll be back. We can review. Can we review The Revenant? Hopefully Concussion we'll review, Heart of the Sea, Chipmunks, Joy. We'll review a whole bunch of movies because it's coming up on that time of year. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Bass.
And listen to us again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather. what's up? Black leather, black leather.
Oh, howdy, Steve. Hello, darling.
Hiya,